You're listening to the EndPod Debate Edition.
Thank you for the introduction, Lexi, and hello and welcome to the EndPod Debate about Campanota's Curse. At least that was what we were supposed to talk about. The episode actually evolved, so we talked a lot more about is sugar bad for your ant colony? But we will start by talking about the Campanota's Curse. Before we start, I want to say that this podcast can also be heard as an audio-only version. Link will be shown in the description of the YouTube video. So the reason we're talking about the Campanota's Curse is, well, both after my bad experiences and also after Jake's bad experiences, which we'll talk about quite soon. I initially put out the Campanota's Curse. It's finally over after my Herculinus finally got one worker, so Campanota's Herculianus or Herculinus. Quite simply, I had a Campanota's Vagus colony, and they are a European species, and I got them with 5 or 6 workers. They had brood. I can't actually remember if they ate the larvae or if the larvae just never developed. But it ended up the workers died one by one, and the queen died, and I was quite a new antkeeper back then. All documented on my YouTube channel. No videos have been deleted. But yeah, I basically lost that queen after, I think, a year of keeping her without getting a single new worker. A few months later, I got a Campanota's Floridanus queen from none other than Lady Lynn, who is in the panel today. Hello, Lynn. And, well, this colony came, and I think they had 2 workers or 3 workers. And what happened was every time they had a big larvae, they ate the larvae, started right over, the larvae grew, and they ate the larvae. And in the end, the queen sadly also died. So when I finally got 1 worker more than I started with in my Campanota's Herculinus colony, I put out a video saying, my curse is over. And that is pretty much my curse, except for that same Campanota's Herculinus colony. It's still just going very, very, very slow. And it's something we're going to discuss a little bit about in today's podcast. So, Jake, why don't you tell all of your stories about your Campanota's Curse colonies?
Oh, God. At least we got a whole show. So, well, I think the first Campanota's I got, I think it was Herculinus. And I got them like middle of winter. And I started with, I think it was 3 workers. And it was my first try. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'll just see how it goes. But slowly over a couple months, the workers just went down and down and down until it was just the queen. And I was left for a couple months with just the queen. And yeah, then she died. And I have no idea why, because they had everything they needed, like all their food, all their sugar water was always being changed and always fresh. So, well, about halfway through that colony, I decided I'll get some more Herculinus. So I just got a single queen, and she actually did quite well. She managed to keep going for about 3 months, I think, and she raised 2 workers, and things were looking quite good for those. And then it all just went downhill again, to be honest, with one of the workers died, leaving just the queen and 1 worker. And then the queen was like, oh, I'm not going to make any more brood. And until about November it was this year, for about 8 months, she just sat around like doing absolutely nothing. And yeah, basically I put them in hibernation in about November, and the queen curled up next to the test tube, turned upside down and died. And I think she did die as well. Like, she wasn't just sleeping, because she was actually growing like fungus. Oh. So she was definitely dead. So yeah, that was her gone. And also there was the Cruentatus that I got the Cruentatus thinking, okay, I failed pretty much with these 2 Hercs. So I'll get some Cruentatus. And that was about in May. And they had about 30 workers. And it was, I thought, okay, I've jumped over the worst part. And I've got 30 workers. So it should happen nicely again. And nope, that colony just nosedived into the floor in no time at all. And yeah, and then there was also Campanota's Habereri. She was a really beautiful queen, but she nosedived into the floor, and that was last year. And there was also another Campanota's Cruentatus queen, who she never got any traction at all, never had any brood or anything at all. I'm not even sure she was fertile, but she probably was. I'm just bad at looking after them, so I think that was the cause for the lack of brood. Yeah. But yeah, I've never had any luck with them. They just die, like, to be honest. That's, yeah.
So you wouldn't say you've learned anything from all of the death? It's just random, all of them?
Yeah, it feels random. The only, like, I don't know, the only thing I can think of is, like, heat. But I've always kept them at about 25 Celsius, and that does all my other ants, like, perfectly fine.
Yeah. Right, so we also have Lynn. And Lynn is the ant detective to say what people do wrong, sugar. So Lynn, when you hear this, first of all, Lynn, can you just explain how your Campanotus curse is not existing, and what you think happened to me and Jake, as far as you would guess?
Well, I actually started to think about back in my brain about back in the days, and I think I have a Currentatus curse.
Oh.
Because my very first Currentatus I got, and I was very inexperienced, actually, those died. So I guess that. I got those again, and those died as well. And a different kind of curse that I have is whenever I have a colony that I love, like really a lot, like my first Maculatus, the queen will suddenly pass away in a few months. Like my first Maculatus only became 6 months of age. And then, boom! Queen dead. Nice.
So, but you don't have a Campanotus curse. You have also successful Campanotus colonies, right?
Yeah, many. Most of mine are successful, actually, except for Currentatus, which I cannot manage to start in any way for some reason. Yeah, I think most of my Campanotus species are doing very well. I only have the nasty habit of adopting ants that are not doing very well. Like right now, I bought eight Fetchin queens without brood. So we'll see how that goes, because those are from last year's nuptial flight. And I bought Singularis queens from a sketchy seller in a really bad state. So, of course, those all died. But normally my Campanotus species do very well.
So what kind of Campanotus species do you keep then?
Oh god, where's my list? need to open my phone. Campanotus maculatus, Campanotus maculatus subnudus, I have Barbaricus, Lignipera, Nicobarensis, Herculeanus, Hurx, whatever, Currentatus, Lateralis, Vagus, Multilarius, Fetchinkoi, and I used to have Sanctus, but I sold my Sanctus recently, last few days, actually.
All right, so you said a few European species, and as far as I know, I don't know, are Currentatus European?
Yeah, they're the biggest ant in Europe, I think.
No, not really.
I don't know, maybe the queens or something. Maybe they're like the biggest queens of any European ant, apparently.
No, also no. Lignipera has the biggest queens, and there's actually an ongoing fight between Barbaricus and Currentatus of which of the two has the biggest majors in all of Europe.
Yeah, that might be it, yeah. That's like Currentatus.
Slammed by Lynn statistics. But Lynn, you had a few European Campanotus, and how have you managed to raise them? Are they doing good? Are they thousands of workers strong, or what's their story?
Well, I actually just restarted with the European species because I'm a little bit more patient nowadays than I used to be. And they are right now they are in diapause because, yes, they're European. I have Campanotus vagus that is actually doing very, very well. They grow like crazy. It's actually quite insane for European species how fast vagus grows. And then I have a really healthy Lignipera queen, because with Lignipera, it's like Herculeanus. It's a hit or miss. Either you have a productive queen or you have a really horrible queen. And with most of these, it's actually when you are past like 20 to 50 workers, they really start to go be productive.
Yeah, and that's the number I'm yet to hit with either of my Lignipera and Herculeanus colony. because it seems from my Herculeanus colony, last year they started off with a great, after I took them out of hibernation or diapause, they just exploded. They had like 7 workers, and they just pumped out another 10 larvae, all hatched into workers, pumped out another set of larvae, and then we hit summer, and that's when they stopped. They just stopped for the rest of the year. Workers slowly died off, and I think it's down to like 12 workers now, so like half of the colony died just because the queen didn't lay any more eggs. Or even if the queen didn't lay eggs, but the larvae didn't develop either. And that's why I've often heard that there's like a diapause that actually starts in the middle of summer, which is just too early. But have you noticed that as well then?
Yeah, it's very true with the Campanotus that the Europeans, Lignipernas and the Herks at least, that they have a very, what's it called? It has a special name that they really focus on their biological clock, I guess. Yeah. And what some people are doing actually is only hibernating them passing them for 3 months and then taking them out again and heating them up again.
And what do you normally do?
Well, I always go the whole winter, like until March, and then I take them out.
Oh, but, all right.
Yeah, from October to March, usually.
Yeah, I've just taken mine out. Just today, they're just heating up, so yeah, exciting to see if the test tubes flood or not. It always ends up going bad for me. But of course, we also have Casey. And Casey, I don't know how many Campanotus you keep, but how many do you keep, and do you also have a curse?
So right now, I have 3 colonies and 2 species. So my first species is Campanotus sansevinus. I have 2 colonies of those, both with about 5 to 7 workers. They're doing good so far. I did the hibernate for 3 months thing. I hibernated mine from like late October to the beginning of this month. But and my other species is Campanotus hyeti. It's one of those smaller Campanotus species. They have about 6 workers, and they sit around and do nothing all day. And I'm very bored with them, but apparently after their first couple of years, they grow fast, so I don't really know. But I also have a Campanotus curse. It was Campanotus vicinus. I got her to about 15 workers. They're really similar to Herculanus or Modoc. I don't know if you guys heard of that one, but really similar to those. I got her to about 15 workers, and that's when you're supposed to be able to like relax and not worry about them dying. But yeah, I got home from work one day, and I went and looked in there, and they had actually, so apparently she died, and they moved her to a different part of the nest. Kind of like how my honeypots did, except for they went a little further and took off all her legs and took them outside. But yeah, so that's my experience with Campanotus so far. I'm super hyped about my sansevinus. I cannot wait for them to get majors. I know that's like 3 years away, but like it's something to look forward to.
Not necessarily 3 years away. I think the first, at least the European Campanotus early, they get the medias, so not the majors, but the bigger normal workers quite fast, like 15 to 20 workers. So that's hopefully something you'll see quite soon. But yeah, guys, the thing I want to talk with is, so Lynn, you said either you get a productive queen or not. Do you think that that's all that is into getting these Campanotus species and these Campanotus cursed? Do you think it's just a matter of luck?
Well, it's possible that it's a matter of luck. I have not looked into the matter that much. I do have now like 3 different queens of Lignipernas, so I'm eager to find out what differences will be between my productive Lignipernas and my 2 other ones. But I think, yeah, it might be luck, but it might also be different factors. So. Yeah, I guess I have to wait and see for this season what it will bring.
Yeah, because I think what hits a lot of people is just how slow they grow, and that's maybe why, at least that's definitely why I would mess up, because I'm just too impatient. And if you have something like Nicobarensis, they just grow so incredibly more fast. It's also why I don't really recommend Herculanus or Lignipernas to any beginners, because I'm like, yeah, No. No. That's no. I just
impressive. The size of the queen when you first get him is good, but for about 5-10 minutes, and then it's like, oh, and then she'll just sit there for the rest of time.
Oh yeah, they never do anything. They just sit still, those queens. So I actually did an experiment with my Lignopurda queens. Funny story, that's how I actually got into contact with Wakushi. So that's how we met. Said it was Wakushi was like, I don't have time to experiment with my ants, but I've heard that if you put these two queens together, they should be fine because the queens kill each other, not the colony members. And since then, it's got me quite interested to see how big you can do the experiment, because I had three queens together in three different test tubes in a specialized Venus setup, and one of the queens died. Sadly, maybe something we're going to talk about in ant news later on, but she started tipping around, and every time I turned the test tube around, she was just, yeah, she fell off, and she did the queen roll and could not use her feet. Now, the interesting thing was that she was the least fed queen, but was it a coincidence or was it not? Either way, this experiment turned out so well, because except for that queen who died for mysterious reasons, she was fed, she had brood, but else the colony have done a lot better, and they actually got a little bit boosted because they had two queens. Saying that, last year they thought, oh, hang on, we're Lignopurda queens, let's not do anything, and the cure experiment kind of just stopped, because there wasn't really much happening. So,
do you think that, like, maybe they stop? I don't know what temperature is like. Your room's quite warm, isn't it, in summer? So I'm thinking, but maybe it's the cold. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I've never heard of anyone keeping like ants in the cold too much, really, except for leaf cutters in a heat wave. Like.
So the funny thing is, I've talked with Okushi a little bit about why, because it seems all of my native species actually do this. They kind of just stop in the middle of summer, and I can look at people all year round have good Glacius Niter queens. And I talk with Wakushi a little bit about rather it was because my room is heated year around. So when I take them out of hibernation, they come into this summer room temperature, and they stay in the summer room temperature all year round instead of a room that heats up and down throughout the year, because I have a quite consistent temperature of 24 degrees year around, both in summer. In the hottest day of summer, my ant room was the coldest room because I have the curtains down. So it was still only 24 degrees in the ant room at that point. But I talked with Wakushi a little bit about rather that could be the cause for them not really doing anything because their natural clock is just all messed up. I don't know what you guys think of that.
It could be a factor, like, as they, I guess, they've got to have some extra gauges for the seasons, like, so they can hibernate when they know what time to hibernate, but the rest of the year, maybe it's, I don't know, less kind of, they could just slip back into hibernation if they want. And if, like, they think it's summer because it's, like, warm in spring, if you get what I mean, it might be like, oh, we've only got 3 months and then we better get ready for bed, like.
Yeah, that's the thing, because I wonder rather it's because my Flavos colony did the same, my Niger colony did the same. They exploded straight out of hibernation, and then they stopped in like June. All three colonies, all my native colonies, Herculinus, Lignopurda, Lasius Niger, Lasius Flavos, they all just stopped. Same with my Phylogonosis.
Maybe you feed your ants once a week, right?
Not anymore. Yeah, I don't know what my schedule is anymore.
Because when I want to slow my ants down for hibernation, I start feeding them less and less and less, and then it's a signal for them that there's less food around, so we need to sleep.
Yeah.
Feed them more, yes.
But the thing is, I feed them a lot. Like, I feed them a big dubia roach for Flavos colony with like 15 larvae just to make sure they have enough protein. And they are like, oh, protein, let's go down and eat it. And nothing happens. And that's the thing. I just wonder if it was better to keep my native species outside of the ant room and in a living room temperature where the temperature rises and falls throughout the years together with the outside temperature. I know it will always, I have like 18 degrees in my normal living room, and 29 degrees in summer, so it's a lot more going up and down compared to my Andrum, which is just 24 year round.
I think you need like some up and down. Although I think like a room, it might have a little bit too much up and down, because I guess underground they've got kind of maybe like a foot of mud to like insulate them from kind of the big swings. But in summer, it's going to be like, let's say the soil is like, I don't know, 25 or something, and it will gradually change, I think. But if you put them in a room, I think it might be a little bit too like quicker change, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. But do you think that's why the colonies act weird? Or do you think it's something irrelevant?
I think it could be, yeah. Because I've always kept mine in the incubator at 25 Celsius, and they've been totally naff so far.
But what about your Campanotus? Have you also kept them in the incubators?
Yeah, they've all been in the incubator when I've had them, and kept at 25 Celsius. So, yeah, maybe they're confused and they've lost what time of the year it is and all of that, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely strange. Sorry, guys, I'm muting myself because my throat is a little bit sore. Lynn, do you think it has anything to do with you? Of course, are a bit more knowledgeable. I'll say at least from pure experience. Do you think the different temperatures in your own room matters?
Well, I'm not entirely sure if swings of temperature matter a lot or not, because most Campanotus queens, I always suggest to when founding to keep their temperature as stable as possible.
Yeah, I'm just sitting thinking. Do you want to say something, Casey? I don't know if Casey's
mic's working.
I think his mic is dead. I can just see he's trying to talk.
I guess as well with the Campanotus on the temperature, to be honest, it might sound stupid, but do some of them live in like trees? And I guess they'll be able to manage swings of temperature a lot. Kind of that would be natural to them. If they're kind of up in a branch of a tree, that's gonna fluctuate quite a bit as well.
I mean, they should live in like rotting wood, and rotting wood would be exposed to a lot more different changes, at least. It's quite funny, but if we look at the exotic queens, has any of you guys have any problems with, I mean, Jake, have you ever tried an exotic Campanotus?
Not until Maragans. Oh, actually, the Habereri. I think she was from Asia, way. And Harry Parry.
So what happened to her?
She just, I think I managed to get one or two workers out of her, but then it just stalled, and then nothing happened, and eventually she died. I was really sad about her dying as well, because she held on for so long, and I don't know, she was such a good looking aunt. It was like, I want you to live. Like, if any of like you Campanotus can live, please be like this one. And I was actually like quite sad when she died. The others, I don't know, you kind of expect it after a bit. You're just like, oh.
Hi, it's Xeed from Pour More Art. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ant Pod, and please visit my Ant and Spider shop at www.pourmoreart.ca. We're a Canadian business shipping ant and spider keeping supplies worldwide, specializing in test tube accessories and a variety of hybrid formicaria, glass outrolls, and enclosures. Enjoy the show.
So one of the things I did different with my Nikos was I pretty much, as soon as they grow large enough to get out of a Venus, I gave them a constant sugar supply, which I know, Lynn, you said I shouldn't do with my Singularis because it will distract them from the protein. But I think it's interesting because they are, I think Campanotus, this gene, is also known as sugar ants. I don't know if it's only the Australian species. Do you guys know that? I mean, I think it's just Campanotus in general that are known as sugar ants as well.
Yeah, it's their common name, Carpenter and Sugar Ant.
Yeah. So I've always given my Nicobarensis a sugar sauce, until like they grew too big for me to just go out and buy sugar snaps all day every day to feed them, because they would drink it all too fast. So now I diluted, and I use one of your feeders, Antti, or Jake, and I give them, I think I refill it twice a week, even though they empty it within a day. But I've always done with that with the Nikos, because I want them to have a good sugar source, and I wonder if that's helping with the other species. The thing that annoys me is when I look at my Herculinus or my Lictiperda, they are fat. The queens are fat. The workers have a fat gaster, but they are just not progressing with their colony. And that's what really annoys me, because they have the larvae. They are fat girls. They go out to eat protein, but mostly they go out to get sugar. And I don't know what to do when the ants are just weird. So,
well, mine have always been fat as well. Like, really fat, the workers, and they look so healthy, and then they just turn over and die. Sometimes it makes me think though, maybe their sugar water is like fermenting inside of them, and there's not enough of them to drink it or something, so they poison themselves. But I don't know. I don't know if it can ferment inside of them. They probably just get rid of it.
Yeah. So Lynn, you of course have tried a little bit of soil. Is there anything you have noticed that you have a massive Macrolatus colony. You have, if I remember correctly, you also have a big Nicobarensis colony. How have you grown them? Is it just protein sugar all the way, or is there anything special you've done?
Yeah, pretty much protein and sugar. I actually tried some different methods with different ants on what's the best method to raise them, or at least trying to see a test tube or a mini heart or Venus, stuff like that. Food wise, I don't give my ants unlimited sugars, not at all, not even my bigger colonies. I actually limit my ants on the sugars, because I don't want them to be that filled with sugars. I don't want them to be prioritizing the sugars over the protein. I also want them to focus on the little bit of sugars that's left in the feeder insects instead of the actual sugars.
So could that be a reason why both Jake and I failed? Because our colony is just fed up with sugar, and actually they are starving. I mean, they are not starving for protein, but they don't have room to eat the protein. And that's why the larvae aren't growing.
I'm not sure, not 100% sure at least, or at least I've never tried or tested it the other way. I might test it with the fetching koi, because I have those anyway. It could be possible, maybe.
It would be interesting, because I've just taken them out of hibernation today. It would be interesting to really limit their sugar and just give them a lot of protein to see if it does anything different for the colony, because then they will have a lot of protein, which they always have. But their gasters are always fed up with potential sugars.
I'm actually doing something similar to that with my Pogonomum ex Barbatus right now. I took the sugar water out because their seed stash is not dwindling.
Not dwindling.
Yeah, so like they're not eating any of their seeds. They're just hoarding all of them. So I decided to take the sugar out. Their liquid feeder, the sugar liquid feeder, I took that out so that they'd be forced to eat their seeds.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think, as you also said, Lynn, I remember when I got my singularity, you were like, don't feed them sugar, because they don't give them I gave them
unlimited sugars.
Yes, exactly. And you said no, and I was like, why not? And you said no, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna take it out then. But of course, the Singularis, they suffered a different fate, which no one will ever know, because they were attacked by the Messers. The real question was, were they doing fine or not? That's the thing with naturalistic setups. Because when I dug them up, there was just a queen and two majors. But I never saw I guess I did see them a little bit. But yeah. So, Casey, how do you keep your Camponotus with feeding sugar and protein?
So far, I've just been making sure they always have, like, at least some sugar in their liquid feeder and then water. But for the most part, that's pretty much it. I keep them dry though. I don't add any humidity to the nest or anything.
So
always drinking water though.
Yeah, so that's the thing with Gambinotus. Of course, you don't need to keep them in a humid nest. They can't self-hydrate the larvae because that's the only thing that needs humidity. That's why you can move them into massive Ferranto nest and just hang it on the wall, which I'm currently doing. But I just thought, we had the Manica Rubida experiment last year, which is about how to have a colony that's quite hard to found. And well, when we heard the experiment, I didn't really see a clear way of which colonies succeeded or which colonies didn't. But it would be interesting to do a Campanotus, Lictaberta, or Herculinus experiment to just see if it's just pure luck. Because it sounds a lot like it's about luck with... I mean, my Vegas colony, I think I made so many dumb mistakes. I think my Vegas setup, they never stood a chance, those Vegases. I was too much of a rookie back then. But it's interesting. It's an interesting topic, at least. But I don't really know if there's other places we need to take this conversation. Do you guys have anything we can add and talk about?
Could, I don't know, mention the outside factors, but I don't think a lot of the time, I think when you're thinking of outside factors, like blaming like, well, maybe it's because they came from the other side of the world. I think that's more trying to find yourself an excuse, to be fair. But it might be something like that, which means that you get a dud queen or something. Like if they've come from the other side of the world on standard shipping, they might be a dud. And if they come from the other side of the world on express shipping, like they might be all right. Could be something like that.
Yeah. It could also just be that you have received an infertile queen that have just been brood boosted. But of course, most of our problems, at least for the tonight's chat, have been about European ants. But that's the thing you never really know with direct sellers. So that could be.
Well, I think one of the species that is apparently really hard to keep is it Constabrensis or something? I'd love to see a Manica experiment like about the Constabrensis.
Australian one?
Like, yeah, the Australian girls.
No, she died with me. That's one of the queens that I failed.
I think I've heard like a lot of stories like that. Apparently they're well hard though.
So the stories from your
as well. Like you literally have to feed them I think.
I'm definitely considering removing the liquid feeders, well, the sugar from most of my colonies now, because it seems like that encourages them to grow a little faster. Like, I'm wondering if food being a scarcity would motivate the colony to grow faster so that they could search further for food in the wild, I guess. I don't know. It's just, I kind of feel like I should just not offer sugar all the time.
Oh, I always say, if they cannot finish the feeder in one day, it's too much.
Then my Nikos are getting enough. they can empty a test tube in about half an hour if there's no cotton. If it's just like the Wakushi test tube, they just drink it in half an hour. I had a problem because they got so much humidity from the nest or from drinking that I couldn't feed them because I couldn't see inside the nest because it just went up to 99% while I was dealing with the mites on the Nico. So I had to stop feeding them sugar because they just drank it too quickly. Luckily, it takes them about a day and a half to empty the antimatter feeders. And I think that's more due to it's hard for them to get inside rather than how much there is. And because I think if I have the middle thing inside, and I think if I removed that, they would be able to finish it in a day or half a day again. So, but it's definitely interesting. It's definitely interesting to think about what sugar can do for a colony if they are performing badly. If it's something that you should limit, because I'm often feeding sugars to Like my Proxima Queen, I fed her loads of sugar and loads of protein, and I always saw her on both the protein and the sugar, and maybe I should just not have fed her as much sugar? It's an interesting topic for sure, because it tends to take the attention. I mean, it's the same with a child. If you give a, you need to give a child more healthy food than candy, and that's where sugar is a little bit more candy than healthy protein food. So, yeah.
I think that's definitely something I'm going to try, is take the sugar out a lot more and leave them with just protein. And I guess a lot of colonies, like my Carabera diversa, I've never even fed them. Well, I've fed them about twice, maybe some sugar, and they had some cake the other day. But the rest of that, they just eat meat, like bugs and stuff, and they get enough sugar out of that to run their whole colony. So I'm guessing the other colonies, they're not going to run out of sugar just because you take away the sugar water.
And I mean, worst case, you just need to feed a lot more sugar to your feeder insects, and they'll then get this protein, the sugar, through the protein itself. Lynn, you had something to add?
That's actually something I've been talking about with another guy recently. We are feeding our captive ant colonies way, like, insane amount of sugars when you compare them to the wild. Because where are the ants, like in Australia or in the deserts or anywhere, gonna find like this amount of pure sugar to just eat unlimited and give to their colony?
I think the only species I think that really can eat like crazy amounts of sugar that we feed them, and we don't actually feed them normally, is the leaf cutters. And I think out of all the ants, they can basically gorge themselves on sugar water like all day if they want to. But yeah, I think the rest of them, they're not really made for it either. So if it's got the tiniest bit of alcohol in it as well, that's like most Campanotus species, I think they're really sensitive to the alcohol. So even a tiny little bit in there, they're dead.
Oh. Something you've tried.
So I kind of wonder if we should feed our ants sugar seasonally, like in the spring when all the flowers are blooming, because I figure that's when they're going to be able to get the most plant nectar, and that's when the aphids are most active, and like the flowers are trying to attract pollinators and things. So like, I wonder if we should only give our ants sugar in the spring.
Maybe autumn as well, when like the fruit falls.
Well, maybe we should just feed them sugar in like fruits rather than pure sugar. So like apple pieces and different fruits with sugar inside, because that limits the sugar but still gives them.
It'd be a lot more nutritious, like, as well, because I'm guessing like your sugar water is basically like water and like basically sugar. It has no extra minerals, whereas an apple, he's got a bit of sugar, a bit of fructose, glucose, like all different sorts of things, and some minerals as well, and vitamins. Like, I think it's definitely a good thing to do.
Yeah, I'm going to try this for this year, because the thing is, I'm diluting my sugar, at least for my Nikos, and also for my... I don't feed my leaf cutter sugar that often, but when I do, I dilute it, because my Nikos themselves, they can empty a full... like the Antics bottles, the big ones, not the massive ones, but the quite big one. I don't know how much. Does it say how much inside? I don't know. But it's like a hand, like a finger-sized bottle. And they can empty that so quick if I don't dilute it. So I always dilute it like 1 to 8 or something with water, just to not use it all. But I think definitely this year I'm going to try to give all my colonies less sugar. And more protein, and see if it helps the colonies, at least for the native colonies, because the native colonies are the colonies I always struggle with, because they don't seem to focus on the larvae, they just exist rather than trying to grow. So interesting for sure.
So thinking about it on like how we feed our ants and stuff, looking back, before I had liquid feeders, I fed my pavement ants, my Tetramorium, a lot more protein. And I'm noticing that since I've quit feeding them so much protein and have offered sugar water constantly, they stay alive, but my workers have become noticeably smaller. So, like, feeding them, I think feeding feeding my ants more protein, like I think that makes my workers slightly bigger, if that makes sense. Because like not polymorphism, but like just like nanotics versus a regular worker. Like that much of a size difference.
I guess it would make sense if they, I think it's just that they focus on sugar, and if they focus on sugar, the larvae has to work with what the larvae have been fed with, and if it haven't received as much protein as it normally would, it may not grow to the size it could do if it just had received protein.
And the sugar water is more easily accessible than them having to pick apart a bug for protein.
I think it definitely depends on the species, though, for sugar water, because like ants like Lasius niger and Myrmica rubra, they'll happily like farm aphids pretty much like all the season long. So they do have like unlimited sugar water. However, I guess it's more like a maple syrup, because it does like comes out of plants and trees, like through the aphids.
Yeah, so because we don't really know how much we don't know the how much sugar is actually in those, except that's with what we've been told, that it's sugar. But it is still the poops of what's inside the leaves and the plants that the aphids eats. Or the residue, the eggs, I don't know what's called, but
I guess it's like really dilute maple syrup.
I feel like this has been a really interesting topic, actually, and it's made me think a lot more. Changed really my mindset. I'm just sitting looking around
this
the colonies.
This episode's definitely thought-provoking.
Yeah, really. I mean, we're not even talking Campanotus, we're just talking, is sugar worth it? Is sugar, do ants need sugar? And just like a Lynn, or I don't know, I forgot who said it, but in the wild, they don't have the same accessibility, and they thrive. It's interesting. Either way, I think, I don't know if you guys have anything more to add, but it's not the longest episode. But of course, we still have the ant news, but I don't know if you have anything more to add on the topic. Lynn, last time we went around this, you had something, but Jake took the word. Do you remember it?
Oh, God. No, I don't remember.
That's all right. So, do you guys have anything more to add?
I'm good. I think that's pretty much it.
So, okay, we're gonna go through the ant news, and then we're gonna round up the episode afterwards. So, guys, anything exciting? I mean, it's actually been a while since we've all just talked on a good old panel. We have had interviews on interviews on interviews. Nice to have a good, relaxing debate again. Casey, is there anything exciting that have happened since last we talked properly?
Spring is on its way, and I have spring fever like none other. I already want to get out and go look for ants, but I have to give it like another 2 more weeks before the snow goes away. And then my Formica Neo Rufia Barbis are absolutely exploding. I am so hyped about it because these ants have been boring for the last 2 years, and now they're just growing exponentially, and it's awesome.
Lovely. What about you, Lynn? I mean, you have not some exciting ant news, but what have happened today?
Well, I was building Lego. I noticed that my Cephalotus queen was upside down. I was like, oh no, 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 no. But she is, I tipped over the test tube really carefully because there's a bunch of seeds in there and did not want the seeds to fall everywhere. She lay down on her side after that, and the workers were acting really weird at her face and at her mouth and pulling and stuff. And I was really afraid that that she would pass away. But when I'm looking right now, she's actually upright again, and she was moving her mandibles, and she was standing against the cotton again. So let's hope that she survives.
Let's hope that it would be a shame if she doesn't manage to survive. Have you received her first own born workers?
Yeah, she has those for a little bit. It's actually hard to keep track, but there's one worker that's really small compared to the others, and I'm guessing that's her worker. And then we have actually a bunch of larvae and some eggs, and they are actually doing pretty well. So that's also why I don't want them to die.
Yeah, it would really, really suck. Would really suck. What about you, Jake? Do you have any ant news?
Well, I did get a couple new species this week. Some Polyrhachis armata, and then a special surprise colony of Camponotus arrogans from Antantix. I totally wasn't expecting the Camponotus, which kind of got me thinking about the Camponotus curse, and I'm extremely anxious about her, especially after Lynn said as well that they're quite hard, these ones, the arrogans. So I've got my fingers crossed, but so I'm quite worried. But I think that's all my news, really. But I think I'll keep everyone updated on how the arrogans comes along, because she's a beautiful one.
Well, I guess we have two colonies to follow in the ant pod then, both the Mesocephalotus and now the arrogans. So yeah, that's good. That's good. I want to say the reason we should have actually talked with Ants Netherlands today about parasitic ants, but everything just I just lost the track of time. So that is hopefully what we'll do next week. So just so all of you know, but I want to say I guess my ant news is I have bull ants. So I have had a bull ant queen for about 2 weeks. Just published a video today about that bull ant on my YouTube channel. And then I have also received a beautiful, massive nest from Ferranto, where I'm just moving the Camponotus nicobrensis inside now. And they are taking way, way, way less space in that nest than I thought. I thought they would take like half the space of the nest. Spoiler alert, they don't. But I still have a few hundreds, maybe even a bit more, hanging out in the outworld. And I don't know how I want them to get from the outworld into the nest. I'm thinking of putting a fan on them, because every time I blow on them, they're like, oh, Dad, this is not a nest, let's go home. And then they just stay in the outworld. So I'm thinking of putting a fan just to blow air on them to hopefully empty the outworld from workers just sitting, hanging around. But yeah, guys. So if that is it for this, I've also done some crazy things on Instagram. But if you want to check that out, you can just head to my Instagram and see the crazy things. but yeah, guys. I feel like that's been a good episode. I think I may rename this episode to "Is Sugar Worth It?" just for fun, because I feel like that's a bit more of what we've talked about. At least it was a lot more interesting to talk about that bit than the Camponotus bit, because it seems it is very just random. I hope that we could learn a little bit today, but it seems just everything is quite random. Guys, Jack, do you have any final thoughts on either Camponotus curse or the sugar problem?
I definitely think we're probably giving our ant too much sugar. Like, there has to. It's pretty much, yeah. And Camponotus curse, I guess find a priest and get yourself an exorcism. That might work.
All right. What about you, Lynn? Final thoughts of sugar and Camponotus curse?
Just stay low on the sugars. Don't overfeed your ants, guys.
All right. What about you, Casey? Casey?
I'm here. I accidentally locked my phone. the idea of overfeeding my ants is completely new to me. I think I am going to dial back the sugar a little bit to see if it makes a difference, and up the protein a little bit more, because I was more worried about like protein poisoning, because I've heard that's a thing. So I'm definitely a little bit less worried about that, and a little bit more worried about giving my ants diabetes and giving them too much sugar. I'm definitely going to try and make some changes and see if it makes a difference.
Alrighty, so I just say with that, with protein poisoning, that's something I have said before, because that's something I've been told as well. But basic ant slapped my butt and said, hang on, mate, that does not exist. If you want, I can't quite remember the reasons, but in pod 101, I think it's like far, far into the podcast when we start talking about it's a 3-hour podcast. But when we talk about how to feed the ant, I said that you can't feed them too much. And he said no, and explained how lab conditions have tested one another thing, and it's not as you can feed them too much protein as you may think. which was a lovely lineage. I've stopped saying that now, because I don't know if it's true or not. It may still be true, but at least Basic Ants had some good arguments for why it may not be true. But guys, this has been a debate about the Campanotus curse and can ants get too much sugar. I want to say thank you for listening in to the AntPod. The AntPod releases new episodes every quite often on Wednesdays, and care guides every few weeks. If there's a topic you want to hear about, send a message to the AntPod Instagram. And with that, you will hear more from the AntPod next week. Thank you.